Good afternoon. Thank you for joining today's conference call. I'm Jim Doyle with Business Forward, and I'll be moderating our conversation today. Currently, all lines are in listen-only mode. Today's workplace thrives on innovation, empowerment, and an open dialogue. But what happens when social discord and discussion seeps into the workplace, bringing with it polarizing views and sometimes intolerance? How are these trends affecting the workplace, and how are organizations responding to the atmosphere? Joining us today to discuss trends and tactics for promoting tolerance in the workplace is Bettina Danes, Vice President of Human Resources at the Society of Human Resource Management, America's largest society of human resource professionals. This is an interactive phone briefing, so after Bettina's remarks, we'll open it up to you for questions. For those of you who are new to our programming, Business Forward organizes local roundtables, Washington fly-ins, conference calls, webinars, and media trainings for more than 100,000 business leaders across America. At these briefings, entrepreneurs, investors, small business owners, and executives get the chance to brief policymakers on issues affecting their businesses and how Washington can work with businesses to accelerate our economy. To date, more than 600 mayors, governors, members of Congress, and senior administration officials have participated in our programming. This is all thanks to the support of more than 60 of America's largest and most respected companies. Before we get started, I need to cover a few housekeeping items. First, this call is on the record. This also means that we will release a recording later today. Also, this is an interactive phone briefing, and there'll be time for you to ask questions and share your advice. You can do this in one of two ways. You can press 1 at any time to ask your question live. You'll be put in queue. Or you can email a question to us at info@businessfwd.org. That's info@businessfwd.org. When we call on you to ask a live question, or if you're emailing us the question, please introduce yourself with your business and where you're calling from. Again, you can press 1 to ask your question live or send your question via email to info@businessfwd.org. Before we get started, I just wanted to cover some of the trends that we're talking about today. Just to sort of provide the context, concern about racism has been growing since 2010 and has grown significantly for the past 3 years. In 2010, 13% of Americans worried a great deal about race relations. Last year, 35% did. This year, 42% of Americans do. Gallup has been tracking this for 17 years. This is a record high. The FBI, which tracks hate crimes, reports that the number of attacks increased 5% last year, with most of those attacks relating to race or religion. For example, attacks on Muslims increased nearly 20% last year. For the past 2 years, attacks against Muslims have been at levels not seen since the 9/11 attacks. While 2 out of 3 Americans believe immigrants strengthen our country, the issue has taken on a political significance over the past 10 years. From 1994 through 2006, the difference between Democrats and Republicans on immigration were modest. Today, 8 out of 10 Democrats believe immigrants strengthen the country versus 4 out of 10 Republicans. These views on immigration reflect a larger trend between the two parties. Pew Research has been tracking the gap between Democrats and Republicans on a range of issues since 1994. Since 2004, before 2004, differences between the parties on race, immigration, the social safety net, and other issues were less than 15% and generally in line with issues similar to where you live, where you work, and how much education you have. Since 2004, the differences between the parties on these issues has doubled from 17% to 36%. Yes, the 2016 election has had an impact, but what we are really seeing is just the increase of trends that have been going on for years. There is some good news, however. The increase in polarization among the U.S. population is being driven largely by older Americans. Younger Americans tend to agree with each other on issues like race and immigration a lot more than their grandparents do. According to Pew, polarization among Americans 65 and older increased 5 times as much as among Americans 18 to 39. A similar study found that this difference was older Americans were growing more polarized at a rate of 3 to 1. So with those trends in context, And in response to a lot of emails and questions from people in our network, we asked some of the best experts in the country to talk about how employers are responding to this increase in tension in the workplace. And we are thrilled to have Bettina join us again. She is Vice President of Human Resources at the Society of Human Resource Management, the largest human resource organization in the United States. Thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be connecting with all of you today on a very interesting topic. And also, not only I lead HR for the largest association of HR professionals, but I also lead our diversity and inclusion efforts. So employers, and we hear every day from different employers, we also actually get a lot of media requests responding to things that are happening in the world, especially in the United States, and have responded to all these trends that we just heard by shifting the focus from diversity and more to inclusion. So it's no longer about what makes us different. It's all about what brings us together and how we can find unity and, you know, without excluding any party. So for many years, it used to be that a lot of employers, especially the ones that were ahead of the trend, will have affinity groups for the employers, a way of bringing different people kind of together in their own groups. We're seeing a lot of organizations now abandoning that approach because of the thought that it excluded others from participating as well. You have heard a lot of in the media in terms of universities and how they're, you know, also under the microscope in terms of, you know, their groups and how unintentionally, I believe, they might exclude certain individuals. So we have seen a real shift. And even as simple as the title, you know, the Chief Diversity Officer or the CDO used to be the C-suite level executive that will lead the diversity strategy. So now they're changing diversity for inclusion. So it's inclusion officers. And the shift is because diversity as it is growing. You know, it used to be, you know, gender related, racial related, but there's so many different aspects. And it differs from state to state. You know, there is, of course, there is the legal component that is based on federal law, but then there is the state component that may be a little different than what the federal law describes. Then there is the local municipality that may also have a different approach. So that may be one of the reasons as to why the shift. There are a lot of articles that we have contributed and published, and we're going to provide with some guidance as to where you can attain this additional information. But diversity is simply having representation. Inclusion is when people get invited to be at the table. One of my favorite illustrations is, you know, diversity is being invited to the party, and inclusion is being asked to dance. So it's not longer about, you know, being there, it's, you know, participating and being part of the discussion. Diversity without inclusion can invite resentment, and we talk about, you know, at times there are employees that may feel excluded. And you know, a general question that we got a few days ago, we had a call from an employee at an organization where they had a new leader, and this leader represented a specific race and was talking to individuals of his same race, you know, identifying them as brothers and sisters. And the people that were not part of that group felt excluded. And, you know, so there's a lot of sensitivity going around, and it's coming from everyone. You know, we used to hear a lot more from minorities and feeling excluded. Now the majority is also feeling excluded. The best managed companies are addressing these trends directly, increasing the amount of time they spend on communication, having a clear communication strategy. There's some other organizations, and we're one of those organizations that are actually developing diversity and inclusion strategic plans that take into consideration the talent management piece, the talent acquisition, and who we hire and we retain based on our geographic locations. Training continues to be a priority for professional development, especially for managers, and, you know, teaching them how to create those inclusive workplaces and holding meetings at offices across their businesses, even more so now where we have a lot of employees working remotely or virtually to make sure that they're not left behind. The best organizations also understand that employees often approach training and, you know, and they might be afraid to ask the wrong question, what they perceive to be the wrong question. So companies are starting sessions with videos, providing participants with articles, tip sheets, cheat sheets, and other briefing materials. We know, for instance, Accenture, about half of its 411,000 employees are diverse, and training for 750 Accenture managers brought religious leaders to office to speak with workers. So, you know, really expanding not just on the typical conversations that we hear. We actually just had last month we had the largest diversity and inclusion conference here in the United States. We held it in San Francisco, and we get a lot of requests every year on different topics. Last year the topic was that the most requested was LGBTQ. This year was actually religion. So that tells you where the country is. And the people who attend this conference are your executives and managers that lead diversity and inclusion efforts for major organizations. At PwC, the new U.S. chairman convened meetings at offices company-wide, also on these topics, and developed an introductory video and training materials to help frame the discussion. And, you know, having come from, you know, from the U.S. chairman kind of gave the idea that this was a cascade approach, that they wanted everyone to be on board. You know, and you have Hershey as well, that they gather their managers for each of its 8 business units to discuss how employees are reacting to events in the U.S. I can tell you that right after the Charlottesville events, we got a lot of media requests and a lot of employers. And one thing that caught everyone's attention was what happened with individuals that were present at those demonstrations that were caught on video, and now their pictures were on social media, and a lot of employers wanted to know if they could fire them. And so that was, you know, a great point of discussion. And, you know, a lot it's a good opportunity anytime something even as unfortunate as this event, because it creates the communication and it sets the awareness and it allows employers to take action. We recently, I think it was a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, there was this woman who was riding her bicycle as the president and his delegation were driving by, and she showed them the finger and was all over the media, and she actually was fired from her employer. So, you know, there's a lot of questions and a lot of things that we have today that we didn't have to worry about just 5 years ago. So the landscape for employers have truly, truly changed, and social media has been a big factor in all of that. You know, we work with a lot of organizations, even with government agencies, and we actually have an executive segment of CEOs and other executives where we're working together to encourage a more proactive approach to creating inclusive workplaces. You can actually view some of those best practices at CEOaction.com. I know I'm speaking fast, so I'm going to, I don't know if there are any questions. If not, I only have another point in, you know, why workplaces matter. Employers are managing these trends because it is the right thing to do and because it is critical to growing your business. you know, a lot of organizations that are, you know, they're concerned about their legal liabilities. You know, at the end of the day, it doesn't have to be legal to be right. It has to also be ethical. And what's ethical? Ethical is the right thing to do. But there's a greater truth. America's growing more polarized because it's getting easier for Americans to avoid hearing from people with whom they disagree. And the platforms exist everywhere these days. So we read from different newspapers and live in different neighborhoods, and people are more comfortable about engaging in these discussions. Today, the office is among our largest segregated environments. You know, imagine somebody, we had an actual question that went to one of our knowledge advisors. There was an employee that had a tattoo that was very offensive, and you know, another employee put in a complaint, stayed in a hostile workplace environment. And this is at a state where image is a protective status, so employees are able to have tattoos and certain things. So that's when, you know, when the local law and the federal law and the state law, you know, you really have to look at your policies and your guiding principles and your code of conduct and anything that will be offensive and not within the values of the organization should be prohibited. And that was the route that this one particular employer took. So, you know, I would like to take any specific questions at this point.
Thank you very much, Bettina. Now we'll open up to your questions and comments. Again, if you have a question and want to ask it live, just press 1 on your dial pad and you'll enter our queue, or you can email it to us at info@businessfwd.org. Please remember to introduce yourself with your business and where you're calling from. We have a couple questions that relate to social media and people using social media at the workplace and combining some of their personal political views with the promotion of the companies that they for which they work. Do you have any general principles or guidance for a small business owner that might be dealing with a situation like that with their employees?
Well, social media has evolved tremendously in the last few years. And, you know, I remember the times where employers actually prohibit the use of social media during working hours. And it was easy to monitor because you basically did not allow employees to go into those websites like or platforms like Facebook. But now with, you know, with smartphones and everyone basically having that access, it's not a practical policy to prohibit employees from using social media. So in terms of whether or not they should be able to use it, I think that, you know, provided it's not intervening with the productivity of such employee, you know, it would be really hard not to. But, you know, employees, you know, have certain expectations, and those expectations need to be communicated in terms of what are the values of the organization. I mean, there's a lot of cases, law cases, that have come out of inappropriate use of social media. One that is coming up to mind involves a police officer. And, you know, someone that went into the platform and was blasting the department and was being negative and very critical of his boss. And it went all the way to court, and the court at the end favored on the side of the employer because, you know, it's a defamation case, and if it's inaccurate, and if it doesn't go along with the values of the organization for which the employees work, you can really hold them accountable.
Our next question comes from Curtis Hughes from Lansing, Michigan, asking for general guidance on as it relates to sexual harassment. This is a little bit off topic, but given what's going on in the news, totally understandable. Do you have any general advice for small business owners who have not had to think about this in the past but want to establish a policy and talk to their employees? And are there any specific resources that your organization has that that they can use?
Well, excellent question. We do have plenty of resources. We just launched a specific platform with all kinds of tools and resources for sexual harassment. So that's one answer to the question. The other answer is that it doesn't have to be illegal to be inappropriate. So sexual harassment in terms of the law, you know, where it's unwanted, unwelcome, unrepeated, and it may involve the quid pro quo or, you know, creating a hostile workplace environment, you know, that's in the legal context. And there is serious liability for the organization and maybe for individuals that were aware and didn't take the necessary steps. However, a sexual harassment policy doesn't have to reach that point. It can be anything that it can be perceived as inappropriate. So a sexual harassment policy with the proper sexual harassment training for all employees, managers, and employees, combined by reinforcing the vehicles provided to each employee to bring those concerns to someone in a leadership role, if it's a small organization, to HR. It can be, you know, a confidential method of reporting, and also reinforcing the non-retaliation piece. You know, a lot of people don't come forward with this because A, they're embarrassed, B, they believe that they may not be found credible, or they think it's somehow their fault. But the number one reason is the fear of retaliation, the fear of losing their jobs, or the fear that, you know, they will not be seen the same way moving forward. So, you know, reinforcing all those things that, you know, there is no retaliation for anyone that comes forward, providing them with the appropriate training, and creating policies that are designed for today's issues. You know, a lot of employers have very outdated policies, so, you know, now is a good time to review them, and we actually have a lot of resources available for that specifically.
On that point, Bettina, if you've got specific questions or are interested in getting some of the materials from Society of Human Resource Managers, please just email the request to us at info@businessfwd, and we'll make sure that it gets to them, and then we'll try to help you out as quickly as possible. Next question is from Eric Duncan from Buffalo, New York. When we talk about diversity and inclusion, there are so many groups we can talk about: race, gender, sexual orientation, ability, religion. It can seem like a lot to address. Where should we start?
Well, you should start with, you know, a talent acquisition plan. You know, what does your organization look like? You know, who are the people that you're hiring based on the geographic location where you're at? Really understanding, you know, the value of bringing people from different backgrounds. And, you know, there's always the business case that is proven, and we see it in all kinds of research, that organizations that are more diverse, they do better. So really understanding, you know, what are your recruitment practices, and also, you know, creating an environment for all employees that regardless of what backgrounds they have or what they look like or what ideas they bring, that they feel that it's a safe environment for them to prosper and advance within the organization. You know, we see when organizations recognize the talent regardless of, you know, what they represent, and it becomes kind of you know, a success story for those organizations that, you know, promote, bring individuals with different backgrounds. We see a lot in terms of the area of disability. You know, they say disability is the invisible D in diversity, because they're really not taking into account. So it's not just what you see, and there's a lot in terms of mental awareness as well. Individuals that, you know, may have, you know, a mental disability that is invisible to everyone else. So having sensitivity training, that's an effective tool as well. You know, understanding, you know, what you may think is a proper way of communicating, it may be offensive to others. So sensitivity training is always a good tool. You know, we just had here yesterday a full day of diversity training. So, you know, we not only are thought leaders in the space, but we try to lead by example. And, you know, whatever we're preaching, we like to incorporate those practices as well. So there are many, many resources. We held, like I mentioned earlier, the largest D&I conference, and that's a three-day marathon of best practices, training, inspirational, you know, from different speakers that come in and speak on different topics. This year was also big on DACA and immigration. We had we also have a Council for Global Immigration that creates a lot of tools and resources for companies that hire individuals from other countries or on H-1 visas. So there are many, many different things that can be done.
We have two questions that are somewhat different, but from Indra Klein, and I'll go through them each in turn. You may want to answer them in turn. The first is, do you have thoughts on how an organization or company addresses messaging to public and shareholders should an incident arise that is made public? And then the second question is, when assessing potential for risk, how should companies, one, reevaluate RG policies, two, implement and record safeguards, and three, reevaluate insurance coverage?
Well, that may be more of a governance question for each organization. You know, there are organizations that have board of directors, and they're reported. You know, there is a governance committee, and there's an audit committee, and there are different types of structures put in place. So, you know, this is not something that surprises anyone. You know, I have seen it where the CEO has brought this up to a board of director and, you know, had been celebrated for doing that. And I have seen it where there, you know, the results were just the opposite. So it's really understanding what's expected from a governance point of view and what are the legal requirements for the organization based on its geographic location and internal policies and charters. You know, if you have a board chart and, you know, it kind of really, you know, it's a guide of all the type of things that need to be reported and how those are going to be reported.
And what about the question about public addressing communications strategies when an incident is made public?
Right. So, you know, these are the type of things that there should be a proactive approach. So you have them ready to roll out. But of course, you know, we tend to react. But, you know, one of the most important things are a communication strategy. And we have seen it. I was trying to think of the one organization that, it was United. When they pulled that doctor from the plane and they dragged him, and there was all this video, and at first the CEO came out and really didn't apologize and kind of blame it on the guy for not following direction. And obviously that proved to be a mistake, and it was a costly mistake. So, you know, having a communication strategy that has your internal and external communication experts on board and more a holistic approach at this type of situations and how are you going to go and address those communications to all the different parties.
We've got here's a question from Leo Morgan from Jackson, Mississippi. What are some common examples of implicit bias that I should be on the lookout for as a small business owner and manager?
I'm sorry, I didn't get the question.
Oh, sorry about that. It's a question about implicit bias.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's so much of it. And, you know, again, this is a situation where, you know, it might require the expertise of someone that has a background in diversity and inclusion. There is a full training on implicit bias and unconscious bias, which is more prevalent. And, you know, we have seen an increase of awareness, which is a good thing. You know, these are the things that you don't even realize, and you're not self-aware that you may have a tendency to have a specific bias for a specific group. So, you know, having those resources and a lot of times come with training is very helpful. And we see a lot of unconscious bias mostly in gender related, you know, with, you know, technical jobs or, you know, leadership roles. And, you know, it's one of those areas that still need a lot of discussion and some intentional, you know, addressing of the matter.
And then one last question. It's from Kay Robinson from Chicago, Illinois. As what advice do you have for dealing with specifically with questions about religion? With gender and race, it seems easier. So do you have any specific thoughts about managing intolerance about religion in the workplace?
So, of course, religion is a protective status as any of the other ones, so it is as important for employers to make sure that, you know, they don't violate anyone's rights. There's a lot of training on religious. We, on our conference, that we had three full sessions, and that was the one that was requested the most. And really understanding what's legal and what's not. I mean, there's certain times, and I believe that the military just went through something similar with men that wear the turban. And it was actually found that they could wear the turban, and at the beginning it was, you know, they were trying to determine whether or not that was safe. You know, if you're in a combat role, was that, you know, make it harder? And so being very familiar what the law is and whether, you know, there is a bona fide, qualified reason as to why you would require an employee maybe not to to follow their own principles and values. There are many religions where they observe a specific date of the week, and they don't work on that specific date of the week. So if the job is on that specific day of the week, obviously, you know, that wouldn't be a reasonable accommodation to make. So it's really understanding what the job requirements truly are and whether there could be accommodations made based on someone's religion is very important. And understanding, you know, the requirements depending on where this employer is located, because it's different by state.
Thank you very much, Bettina. So if you're interested in learning more, please visit the Society of Human Resource Managers website. It's shrm.org. We also mentioned ceoaction.com. It's an organization recently created, sponsored by 300 different companies, and they have all sorts of best practices there. If you have any questions about the materials at shrm.org, please let us know. Send us a note at info@businessforward.org. And we will get right back to you, businessfwd.org. That's all the time we have today for questions, but before we go, a couple quick announcements. Please, number one, please check your email for a quick survey and a recording of today's call. Second, join us next Wednesday for a conference call on the pending tax reform plan. Mark Mazur from the Urban Brookings Tax Policy Center will walk us through the differences between the bills passed by the House and Senate and what happens next. And again, thank you to all of you for taking time out of your busy days to join us. And Bettina, Danis, thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate your advice. We look forward to working more with Society of Human Resource Managers in the future. Everyone have a great day.